This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This week's episode of Screen Talk is brought to you by the Amazon original movie One Night in Miami. Described by USA Today as simply one of the best movies of the year and hailed by Entertainment Weekly as a critical knockout, humanizing and celebrating the four icons and all they stood for. One Night in Miami is a fictional account of one incredible night where icons Muhammad Ali, Malcolm X, Sam Cooke, and Jim Brown gathered discussing their roles in the civil rights movement and cultural upheaval of the 60s. Directed by Regina King, written by Kemp Powers, and starring Ellie Gorey, Aldis Hodge, Leslie Odom Jr., and Gotham Award winner for Breakthrough Actor, Kingsley Ben-Adir, for your consideration for Best Picture. Now streaming on Prime Video. Welcome to Screen Talk, VR's weekly movie pad podcast. I'm Eric Cohn, the executive editor and chief critic, joined as always by Ann Thompson, our editor at large, for the Sundance edition. And Ann, stuff is.
I like your hat.
Stuff is happening. I've got my Sundance IndieWire hat on, my water bottle lurking around here somewhere. I've been doing stuff virtually from my desktop and sometimes in my Oculus headset all day long for the festival. Plus, markets are moving like crazy, award season things are developing. So, we are living through a busy time, and I have to wonder, even with Sundance going on, this sense of how do we kind of deal with the fact that we can't have physical things happening, it does feel like a particularly exciting season because all of a sudden we have a lot of different developments to talk through. So what was to you kind of the headline item this week outside of obviously this festival starting up?
Well, I'm still in the awards fray, and things are getting coming thick and fast. The Spirit Awards were the big headline because, as the critics had also supported it, Never Sometimes Early Always became the front runner with the most nominations at the Spirit Awards, and yeah. Sidney Flanagan got nominated, and it just puts Eliza Hittman in as a writer director even further closer to the goal, in my view, which is that she might get a screenplay nomination,
which would be pretty great. I mean, for a movie like that that didn't have a formidable awards campaign behind it, that premiered so early in 2020 and had its theatrical interrupted. I mean, look, hope springs eternal for First Cow, but I would say that Never Rarely is
less likely
a movie that definitely has some serious momentum as an underdog. So that's great.
I hear good things from people who actually see it. You know, I mean, that's part of what's going on. I'm sure you're doing the same thing, but as I do interviews more than usual, at the end of the interview, I just ask people what they're liking and what they're looking at and responding to, because they're all starting to watch the stuff now. And this one is one that people respond to. And then I think, you know, you can see Ma Rainey's Black Bottom is continuing to do well. There were a lot of Netflix movies that weren't eligible because they were too big budget, but you know, that one did well with The Spirits. That's probably the highest profile movie among all the nominees there.
It was, I think, a really
battle cool. is doing well, you know, Riz Ahmed continues to rise.
Yeah, I think that's obviously, I mean, we knew that, you know, a Nomadland, Minari.
That goes without saying, yeah.
These kinds of films, but they should be in the mix. I mean, I've slowly gone from being a real Debbie Downer when it comes to the Spirit Awards to appreciating when they get it right. And I know it's an arbitrary process, just like the Gothams, a committee talking things through. But when you look at Best Director and you have stuff like First Cow and Nomadland and Never Rarely and Promising Young Woman and Minari, it's not just a, you know, it's nice that it's a diverse list. And
it's a good list. It's the list of the strongest indie contenders that could really go. Forward. Minari needed this, really needed this, because it wasn't getting the love from the critics groups. And Steven Yeun needed this, you know. And on Sound of Metal, Paul Rocky got in too. So, that could happen.
Sound of Metal continues to be a favorite. I wouldn't even say that's an underdog. That's a movie that seems like it's going to get a lot of nominations. More and more people seem to be watching it and talking about it, which is really exciting to see.
I mean, but if you look at Ma Rainey versus, say, Promising Young Woman, which got a few nominations, including director and screenplay, whereas Ma Rainey was best feature and acting, but it didn't get screenplay and director. And I bet that's going to go forward at the Oscars with Ma Rainey. It'll be more about the acting than the writing and the directing.
That makes sense, but the correlation here is a little odd because they're assuming there's a correlation because the screenplay is a very quirky category and they have a best first screenplay category too. So it feels a bit like there's this sense of we can play around in these categories a bit more. I mean, you have something like The Half of It getting a best screenplay nomination and then Palm Springs getting first screenplay and the assistants in there. It's a cool range of movies, but I mean, it's obviously arbitrary in that sense because people want to spread the love too, and that ends up being a part of it in a way that in Oscars it doesn't always, because as you say, you know, getting that screenplay nomination means that you have strength in the picture category, and Nomadland didn't get a screenplay nomination. So,
well, Nomadland is going to be fun to watch because it is an anomaly. You know, you have someone like Chloe Zhao, who's the editor and the director and the writer, and you have this interaction with real people and this kind of half adaptation of a book, half on the road improvisation / fiction. It isn't the usual, and people in the Academy may not know what to make of that in terms of the nomination. Yeah. So they may not give her a screenplay nomination. I think they will, though.
It seems likely. I mean, I can't tell you how many copies of that screenplay I got in the mail. So
eventually, it's like on the job. It's
like, but the thing is, I mean, some of these screenplays, I got the two that I opened that I got in the mail were that one and Sound of Metal, because they are movies that made me want to see what it was like on the page. They have a lot of, you know, a lot of silence and you know, really interesting kind of quieter moments. And like the first page of Sound of Metal is like a huge block of descriptive text, and it's just fascinating. And Nomadland is kind of similar. It feels very novelistic. So I wonder.
It's interesting to think about, though, how, you know, what was the written version of each of those scripts before the movie?
You're not necessarily seeing
the shooting script.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, with Sound of Metal, that was a script that was bouncing around for a decade. So who knows? You know, so yeah, that is a good point. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see how these things go. Let's talk about another nomination, a set of nominations this week that I don't know if we can really draw any major conclusions about Oscar buzz, but it does seem like at least the announcement elevates a certain movie. And that is our friends over at the NBRs, the National Board of Review, giving a lot of love to Mr. Spike Lee for The Five Bloods.
Which is good for him. He needs it.
That came at the expense of probably other Netflix movies that I'm sure they were pulling for. You don't see Trial of Chicago 7 all over that list in the way that you see The Five Bloods. I think that's significant. This is a movie that we need to pull over.
The other thing that's breaking this, I think that's the, all right. National Board of Review usually is the first one out. It's this very odd hodgepodge of educators and filmmakers and critics, and it's not really an organization that reflects anything, really. It doesn't reflect the Academy. It doesn't reflect critics.
It's been around a while. It doesn't mean anything.
All that it means is that at the very beginning of the season, it happens to be the first one, which didn't happen this year. You guys at the New York Film Critics got to be the first one. They pushed it back, and as a result, it has very little impact, it seems to me.
Well, I wonder, I mean, what we don't know yet is NBR going to try to do something virtually to continue to have its brand out there? Because normally what happens with those awards is, yes, they're first, but then also they get to have a splashy sit-down dinner with speeches and red carpet, and that red carpet
Who's tuning into these things? How many people watched the Gothams? How many people? I enjoyed the New York Film Critics Show very much. I actually thought Stephen Garrett and other people that we know who put it together and Stephanie Zakerik as the host and the location at Film Society, it was beautifully done.
Experience. It
was excellently done. But five people watched that, Eric.
But well, we can pull up the YouTube and
you find out. You tell me.
Probably not. I think it's more than the members watch.
A few hundred.
But it doesn't, I don't know, does it necessarily matter? I here's what I've always felt about this community in general. Like, you could argue, okay, Cineast has less of an impact than the New York Times or whatever, but there's some influential film people who read Cineast, and that can impact a critic at the New York Times. I think it's
all these things do, and I go back to this every time, is it's just who reads it. It's more about who reads it in the trades, really, who reads it in the news.
There was some coverage.
Of course there was. The New York Film Critics is hugely influential. Eric, it's very influential. Don't worry, Eric. I'm talking about the show. You're getting hung out. The MBR party is irrelevant.
Always like going. Drive by.
Especially this year. Yeah. Now, AFI list, I would say, is more impactful than MBR.
Right. Well, that is another development. So what's the big takeaway there? Because Netflix also had a big presence there.
So they had 4 out of the 10 in both the, or was it 3 out of the 10? I don't want to misspeak. Yeah, they had more than anyone else in both the film and the TV. But the real surprise was the inclusion of Judas and the Black Messiah, which is the new Warner Brothers movie.
Not coming. Not even reviewed yet.
Right. So that is a group of academics and film industry people and actors, a diverse group, very diverse, that might reflect a kind of mainstream academy point of view.
Well, I mean, if so, then it points to certain things that we thought were not making a lot of noise that could still have some passionate defenders. I mean, you already mentioned Minari, which needed that Spirit Award bump.
Right, that got in there, and Ma Rainey's Black Bottom got in there.
You even have Mank in there. I think that's significant.
Mank got in there, right?
For a while. Judas would be interesting. Judas, yeah. I think, points to another thing that we'll be talking about today, which is
Sundance. Bloods got in there, yeah.
So once Judas goes to Sundance, quote unquote, we'll see what happens there. But yeah, I mean, from Soul to Sound of Metal,
my sense is that Judas is getting good reviews is what it needs. It's solid. It's a solid movie. They did a good job.
Yeah, it'll get a lot of respect.
Yes, really good.
It's one of the more, I would say, widely accessible films of a sort of higher profile studio caliber.
It's also an exciting new filmmaker who we haven't really, I didn't see his last movie, Newly Weeds.
It was a good Sundance movie about a bunch of stoners. It was fun. Yeah. It's about Newly Weeds, but nothing like Judas and the Black Messiah. So it's not a good precedent to base this on. Before we get deeper into Sundance, though, we should talk about the stock market, because I understand basically nothing about it. And suddenly everyone has an opinion about it more than usual. In this pandemic, I think a lot of people have tried to have an opinion about the stock market.
Everything is politicized now, right? So you've got warnings about the people who want to storm the Capitol again, right? Coming along, the rebel insurgents, and then you've got rebel insurgents in the Wall Street day trader futures
community. Or maybe just trolls on Reddit. We don't really know.
They want to mess up all, the Wall Street people's, betting on the future. So they ran up the stock for AMC, one of the beleaguered theaters out there.
And GameStop, which was not something anybody expected based on its brand.
It went down again. So
yeah. We were doing this yesterday, we'd be having a different conversation 24 hours.
Well, it was predictable. I mean, because finally these things rise and fall on their real fundamentals. And even if AMC has loaded up some more debt to get through till the end of the pandemic, they're still not in good shape.
Yeah, it's kind of obvious that they're screwed. So, I mean, the news about that was so, it maybe if it was like a Netflix thing or it would make sense. And then you could say, okay, something really big is happening here. But because it only just drew more attention to the fact
that they're in big trouble.
Yeah, and then fundamentals. So yeah,
I'm rooting for them. Obviously, I'm not rooting for AMC to do badly. I'm just saying, I mean, unfortunately, during the pandemic, many businesses have been brought into way bigger debt in order to stay afloat. And that's AMC is certainly in that category.
So this does bring us to Sundance, which generally does get spoken about in the context of the state of art house exhibition. You know, this time last year, we would have gone to Art House Convergence the day before, maybe seen a couple theater owners, kind of took the temperature on that side of things. Obviously, very different situation right now being a virtual festival, but we're going to give it a go and watch a bunch of movies. And you know, I went to a press conference today and wandered around the New Frontier space with my little virtual avatar. And I guess what's going to be fascinating to see is that there are art houses showing movies in places like Texas. And I wonder, with suddenly Sundance getting its wish of being much bigger than a Park City event, yet not in the way it could have envisioned it, if there will be an upside to this. Certainly, we will be putting the festival to the test in the sense that Carrie Putnam said on the press conference today that they expect more people to watch to a bigger audience than ever before in the history of the festival.
And that some of these premieres are way more people signed up than the Eccles Theater.
So what does that mean?
100 people, yeah.
Does that help these movies get a bigger audience? I mean, there are films like Coda, which will be a big crowd pleaser.
But that's what I'm going to watch today. We're taping this on Thursday. I'm going to watch, that's going to be my first film.
So a movie like Coda, which I've had a chance to see, that is a movie that is a very accessible crowd pleaser. Coda stands for Child of Deaf Adults. It's about the hearing child in a deaf family who wants to be a singer. She's a teenager. It's a, you know, obviously a coming of age story, very Sundance-y, very Searchlight-y, you know, there's going to be a bidding war.
She wants to help her parents who are deaf.
And so a lot of it is sign language with subtitles, but there's also a lot of spoken dialogue and it's funny. It's emotional, all that. You'll like it, I think. And I think it'll make you cry, but
I'm an easy cry.
you'll be there in a couple minutes into it. But here's the thing: you're not, even if you have more people watching it in the evening than you have seats in the Eccles, you won't have the Eccles standing ovation. You won't have the buyers in the lobby afterwards huddling.
That's what I miss. I'm just going into the theater and seeing everybody sitting in their little chosen seats, where roadside on the right, Amazon up at the front, you know.
Yeah, we all kind of roam around.
We know exactly where they all sit. We hang out with them and we talk them up and find out what the hot titles are. That's what I can't get.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying. Certainly been getting text messages like crazy from people.
And I had my daughter said, "Hey, I heard this was good." People like Miranda July put something up to promote this movie that she likes. You know, you have to get your information where you can find it.
Frankly, the deeper you can go, the more festival experience you'll get. It's just you have to be open-minded in a way that most people are not used to being. I mean, there's the Zoom thing, but again, if you're accredited to the festival, if you have a $25 Explorers pass or a press or an industry pass, you can go to the New Frontiers website. It's like newfrontiers.sundance.org, create an avatar and walk around a film party space. And when you get close to somebody, your video monitor turns on. So people will see your face and it kind of works. I ran into
people. Interact with anybody today?
I chatted with Brian Newman, used to, you know, run Tribeca he's a film consultant. I saw Carrie Putnam in there today and Shari Freelo, obviously the New Frontier programmer. And there were obviously a bunch of VR, new media type of journalists and so forth trying it out. So they have created an active social space to experience the festival. And yeah, well, you know, you don't have to have a headset, that you can access it. You can access it through your browser. You can go deeper with the headset. It's just, this is a different side of the creative community that tends to take advantage of these kinds of opportunities. And I don't think a lot of people are going to figure it out.
If I want to replace the experience at the, I'll be curious to see. So today, when I get on to see Coda, I'll go early and I'll see if I see anyone waiting in line, you know.
Right, that's the thing. It's a little chat room.
We'll see how that goes. Look, most of the people are getting their own links anyway.
Well, not the buyers, supposedly. Buyers are seeing fewer than press. That's what I've been hearing.
Really?
Yeah, because the here's the logic, as I understand it. Press publicists are nervous about press people figuring out the complexity of watching movies when you have like a 3-hour timed link or whatever. So they're like, whatever, here's a password protected Vimeo link and do your thing. And they need those reviews. But they also need a framework for buyers to see movies in a festival environment and then go to the sales agent and make an offer. And you can do that.
They need the timing of that too.
Yeah.
And they need the timing of the reviews breaking.
Right. So we know we're going to have the reviews at this time and then the offers are going to come.
And the tweets.
Right. So for the first time in a while, I actually feel like I have a real advantage over the buyers seeing a lot of stuff early.
Love it. You love it.
Gosh, I'm leaning into it.
I love it.
Lots of good stuff. I have to tell you, I've seen some good movies. So hopefully stuff sells.
There's two animated movies. I saw one of them, but I'm not allowed to talk about it, right? Because it hasn't shown yet.
Yeah, I guess with the embargo situation is
so well. And Flea. Let's just say that the word is good on both of these.
I've seen both animated movies. They're Flea will have screened by the time people hear this podcast. I think that's the best film I've seen at the festival. It's an animated documentary, brings to mind Waltz with Bashir. It's about a gay Afghan refugee who looked back on 20 years of escaping his surroundings after the Mujahideen came to power and resettled in Denmark with his husband. He lives a happy life, but he's never told his story before. The animation allows him to have anonymity because of all the border crossing he did. And that allows you also to...
That's an interesting way to deal with the problem that David France had on Chechnya. Yeah, interesting. Yeah.
So it's a really amazing Danish documentary, and Riz Ahmed is going to voice this character for an English language version, which I'm sure is something they can dangle to buyers as sort of a sexy add-on. So I think this one's gonna have some legs.
Because it was more of an adult animated almost a fantasy genre movie.
Yeah.
And it's very creative. So
Crypto Zoo is like one of those Yellow Submarine psychedelic rides.
You could get high on them and watch that movie, no question.
Or you could get high on that movie.
You could. It's extremely psychedelic in more ways than one. Then the one that I'm also looking. So the other movie I'm seeing tonight is the Festival of Soul, which
Summer of Soul, Questlove. Director,
one that was opposite Woodstock and everything. So I'm looking forward to that. Those are probably the two hot titles tonight.
Day One seems to. I mean, with that, those two plus the latest documentary from Nam Phu Wang, it seems like a pretty well curated opening to the festival, at least from a film standpoint. Even without all the extra noise, we'll see how it carries over. How does the weekend go? Is there a narrative arc to the festival? Do a lot of buys happen? Do people wait till they can have physical screenings later, or what's going to happen on that front? And then I wonder about how the other aspects of the festival go, the keynotes and the panels and all that kind of stuff. Who turns up for those things? I hope people make the effort, because
absolutely. Yeah, we're doing a filmmaker dinner, which I'm excited about, and there's a couple movies from actors turned directors. I'm excited about the Rebecca Hall Passing, which is partly based on her experience with her biracial mother. And I'm looking forward to Land, the Robin Wright movie is in this group. It's her debut.
And there's, what's the other big one?
Count of Three, is that the name of it?
Three, yeah.
Jared Carmichael. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to Lucy Walker's movie, which is about firefighters and the terrible fires last year or in 2018. She goes in and checks out what's going on in those communities. What else? Judas will be a big deal.
Yeah, there's a nice range of stuff. I think that's what's sort of interesting about it. I mean, you look at the international films and there's there's two black.
Night of the Kings is playing again, the Ivory Coast submission from Neon.
There's plenty of movies that I think will satisfy some kind of audience. I mean, a documentary on Alvin Ailey isn't going to change the language of cinema or something, but I assume that it's a satisfying documentary to some contingency.
There's a movie called Mass, which I'm hearing good things about.
asking about family that confronts a shooter. You have documentary on Rita Moreno, which I'm sure will be very satisfying to a certain audience. I mean, you just go through these things and you can
see. Oh, and there's a documentary called Rebel Hearts, which is about the nuns that founded my daughter's Catholic high school, Immaculate Heart. Rebel nuns. I'm into it. You know, I like nuns.
Well, there's plenty of room to explore the schedule. It sounds like a lot of stuff already sold out, but people can still buy tickets for $15. So I am very curious to see how it goes. In the press conference that happened today, it was a Zoom-based thing. You kind of submit questions, which I despise because, you know, I like to go to one of those things and grab the mic and ask a question, and then they can't squirm away from it. If you tap it into a little box, they can
avoid it.
I made this mistake in that I asked a question, but I prefaced it with a joke, and they only asked a joke question because the participants, Kerry Putnam and Tabitha Jackson and Gina Duncan, they were all against this Zoom background of the Egyptian. And so I prefaced my question by saying, first of all, how cold is it on Main Street right now? Because they looked like they were standing outside the Egyptian, not inside the Egyptian. And then I had a serious question, but they only asked the joke question. So that didn't really go. Here's what I really wanted to ask was, just how likely is it that Sundance has a future in Park City now that you figured out a way to do a festival outside of Park City?
They won't have the answer until later on in the festival.
I know, but I want to know what the thinking is like. I want to know what it will take to answer that question. And I think that will continue to be on a lot of people's minds, especially the industry folk, as they go through this festival for the first time doing their business without having to be there.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about acquisitions a lot, but actually one of the more important things I believe at Sundance is always talent discovery. And that's what a lot of people are going to be looking at. And that has less to do with buzz than just checking out all the movies and seeing who's good, who's that actress who just pops, who's the Jennifer Lawrence or the, you know, of this year, you know?
Right.
Kerry Washington popped at Sundance. Ashley Judd popped at Sundance. Tilda Swinton popped at
Filmmakers. Sundance. Filmmakers.
Anna Lily. Steven Soderbergh and Quentin Tarantino and any number of people.
Back through the years and it's all
Sally
there.
Potter, yeah.
Bottom line, this is also a really short festival. It's only 7 days. So next week when we do our next episode, the festival will be over. It won't be winding down. It will have happened. The awards are on Tuesday, and then there's like one more day, and that's it. So happy festival, Anne. I look forward to finding you around somehow, and let's see how this goes. I mean, I'm going to keep playing the game. I hope you do.
I want to see your avatar. I wish I had a headset.
I'm going to bring you in there somehow. You'll see.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.